Hello there. Welcome to the Visionary Practice Solutions podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Sarah, and I am here to talk all things private practice, helping you to build your vision of the private practice of your dreams. Welcome back to the podcast. It is January of 2025, and we are now in the throes of Q1. Most of us have done our business planning at the end of last year. If you haven't, it's totally fine. Don't worry about it. We're still early enough in January that you can make some pretty key strategies for yourself for the first quarter of the year. I do like to break things up into a 12-week year. And if you haven't read the book, The 12-Week Year, I would highly recommend it. The basis is you want to come up with really large goals that normally would kind of be more of an annual goal, and then break it down as if you're going to have to achieve it in about 12 weeks, which is really cool. The whole idea with setting up a 12-week goal and then breaking that down into really measurable items to kind of check off a list is what's really going to make us successful. So for today, one of the big 12-week goals that I know a lot of people have is how to scale their private practice. So I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the strategies for scaling your practice operations without actually, you know, compromising the quality of your patient care. We want to maintain those really high standards and also understand what scaling is going to mean for us at the various, you know, points that we are at with our practices, as well as how do we look for signs that we are ready to scale. I want to talk about how to do this without stressing out your staff, because that's pretty important. They need to be on board with this. I want to talk about how to use some tech and innovation to help scale your practice, and then also when to consider another provider. So the first thing is, let's talk about when to actually consider scaling your practice. So, you know, when do you decide to do this? Some of the signs you can look for that are pretty obvious is, you know, if you've got a consistently full schedule and you're booking out 2, 3, and 4 months, even for your follow-up patients that, you know, you normally would have gotten in within a couple of weeks, you're starting to get to that time where that can be a bit of a problem even for patient care. So you need to consider scaling at that point. If you have long wait times, so if you're constantly running behind and it's, you know, it's not an efficiency problem, you've kind of already worked through all of the things in your office about where you can improve some efficiencies. If you've still got a long wait time because you're legitimately trying to fit too many patients into one day, that's definitely a problem. And then if you've got a big difficulty with accommodating new patients, you know, if your first available new patient appointment is like 6 weeks out, odds are that patient needed you today. Right? Or they wouldn't have called the office. And so odds are they're going to go find somewhere else that they can actually get in sooner. And typically, unfortunately, patients will just kind of no-show for your appointment, even though you had them booked out that far. And you could have gotten somebody else in. So your show rates on some of these new patient appointments, if you're finding that you're getting a lot more no-shows and you're booked out 4 to 6 weeks, this is a good sign it's time to scale. Now, the key strategies for scaling without compromising your patient care, there's a few ways to do this without necessarily like automatically having to hire additional providers. And that tends to be the first thing that comes to everybody's mind. But I always recommend seeing if you can implement some of these in-office strategies before you start really hiring additional providers. Because additional providers, no matter what level, are expensive. So first things first, let's optimize your internal operations, right? You want to look at all of the processes. So from the time the patient's coming in the door, or actually even before that, really from the time the patient calls to the time they come in the door, all the way through when they leave and their experiences after the visit. Those are all processes that you want to take a look at. Sometimes it's easier for people if you can kind of break it up into sections on the encounter. So, you know, you'll have your front desk's phone encounter with them or their online interaction. That's their pre-in-office appointment. Then you're going to have the check-in process. Then you're going to have the actual rooming process. Then the visit process. Then your post-making an appointment process. You get the general idea. If you break those into sections, it gets a lot easier to look at each of these sections to figure out where you have problems. Additionally, polling your patients, like if you've got some patients that are consistent returning patients, I would absolutely ask them, you know, how do you feel about how the office is going? You know, what would you suggest we do differently to make this, you know, a little more streamlined, a little easier? And you can honestly just say it like a conversation. People that know your practice well are probably going to have opinions. Or they'll just tell you, hey, I really like that you do this and my other doctors don't. You know, so you know that that's something that you should be kind of doubling down on and capitalizing on. The other group to ask how things are going is your staff. And your staff is the one having to do all of this kind of work. So definitely talking with your staff is hugely important. And just poll them. You know, every 3 or 4 months when you're having conversations with them about how things are going, ask them what is not working. They're the ones that are working with patients on a regular basis. So they're going to know where there's inefficiencies in their processes. You know, you might find out that your new patient paperwork, when people are coming in to the office, it's just too time consuming. You know, it's taking patients 20 to 30 minutes just to fill out their new patient paperwork. So some of the efficiencies you can work on are really pushing patients to do their paperwork online ahead of time. And if you just don't have that patient population that's as tech savvy, you've got to shrink down what it is you're actually having them fill out ahead of time, so that you can get that down to ideally 10 minutes at the most. And then you know that you're not having a huge bottleneck in the flow of the clinic. Now, that's just an example, but you get the general gist. You're going to find problems. You want to find problems. This is not a reflection of you or how you've been running your business. These are opportunities for us to make things better. So the questions to ask yourself once you've collected everything is, how can you actually streamline these problems that you find? You know, do you need a better practice management software for the scheduling? Do you need better billing processes? Do you need better eligibility checks? Do you need an easier, faster way for you to do documentation because your notes are what's hanging you up? You know, and then also looking at, like, are you limiting the number of new patients or patients in general because of the time it's taking you to get from the beginning all the way through the documentation of the visit? These are where things like dictation software or a scribe could help you, you know, save hours every single day. Now, the second part of optimizing your operations is actually standardizing these workflows. So once you guys make changes and you've decided how you're going to streamline your processes, standardizing your workflow by documenting out your standard operating procedures is really important. It seems repetitive and obvious when you first go to do these SOPs, standard operating procedures, but they're not. Anytime that you assume something is a given, you are bringing in an opportunity for something to be done improperly or in an inefficient way. Everything that your office does needs to be documented out, including, you know, how to book a new patient, what they need to say on the phone, what are the questions that need to be asked. Have a flowchart for your front desk person that if they say this, then this, if they say this, then this. These are the things that you want documented down so that if for some reason you lose an employee, if you have to change things up, somebody else has to come in temporarily to do that work, you have it all documented out and they can follow your standardized procedure every time. Now, the other benefit to having these SOPs done is it allows you to further see where things are inefficient and where you may need to standardize things across all aspects of the business. So this could be collecting payments, handling these calls. You need to have an implementation for all the routine tasks in order to just increase your efficiency and evaluate it as the time goes on. So this is a working document. These are not things that are like set in stone. It's my employee manual. That's not what this is. Standard operating procedures, while they can be part of your employee manual, it's just the working documents that are always up for changing. And I would honestly recommend reviewing these documents quarterly. So even with your staff, so that you guys can say, hey, yeah, you know, we tried doing it this way. That's just not really working. And we're finding it's better if we're doing it this way. You would be shocked how often your employees will just make little tweaks to things to make things easier on themselves. They don't even think about it. But you guys need to document those things so that you have this all written out. And the final way that you can see where you have inefficiencies and you need to make improvements is going to be to leverage your data. This is where you're going to look at your key performance indicators. You need to have your KPIs together. If there is nothing else that you do for yourself in the month of January, right at the beginning of the year, please get yourself KPIs. You need to know how many new patients you're seeing, how many of your specialty services you're doing. You've got to have data. We cannot make good business decisions unless they are data-driven. You can't do business decisions based on, I feel like I'm getting more patients from X, Y, and Z. No, you need to know where exactly you are getting all of your patients. Are they coming from your online marketing? Are they coming by word of mouth? Like, those are all things that go into KPIs. I do have an episode on KPIs in general and which ones are the important ones to have, the basics for a practice. So if you'd like to look up that podcast episode, it is in our library. The next thing you can do for scaling your practice is thoughtfully expanding your existing team. So again, this does not necessarily mean hiring a new employee, although it may. That's kind of the second part of this. But the very first part that you need to do before you even consider that is doing a staff audit. And this involves having everybody write down what exactly they are doing in a day, what their daily tasks are. Now, you want to compare this across everybody and make sure to communicate with your staff why you're doing this exercise. Make sure to tell them, I am not doing this in order to check up on you and see what you're doing. I don't want you to overembellish this to make it seem like we're busier than we are. I just need to know what exactly you're having to do on a daily basis so that I can make sure that you've got enough time to do everything and that we are optimized as best we can. You are going to get some overinflation of what they're doing. That is human nature. You can kind of weed through it as you're going through. You know, you see these things and you're like, I don't really think you're doing that every day. And that's okay. That's totally fine. They're going to do that. But once you've kind of weeded through that, you can compare across everyone to make sure that you don't have giant holes in the things that need to be done that maybe, you know, employee A thinks employee B is doing and employee B thinks employee A is doing. So let's make sure we don't have any holes in there first. Definitely do not want any duplications. And, you know, if you've got two different people that think that some of their primary duties are the same thing, you're probably getting employees that are like double checking and double working each other's work. That is an inefficient use of their time. So that needs to get nipped in the bud and assigned over to one person to have cognizant of. The other concern to watch for is that you have the wrong people doing the wrong tasks. And that may play into what that employee's actual natural strengths are. It may also play into, you know, what job it is they're actually doing in clinic. Do you have your MA trying to take payments in the room? May not be the worst idea if your front desk, who's normally taking payments, is completely overwhelmed. But if your front desk isn't doing a whole lot and it's putting your MA behind by trying to take payments in the room, then you need to switch that up, right? So making sure that the right people are doing the right tasks and really defining who it is you need for those particular tasks is a huge part of this staff audit. And then I will just say as a side note, having one really efficient employee is always better than having two, like, okay employees. Any day of the week for a business, it is better just to pay one efficient employee better than it is to pay two employees the minimum. Keep that in mind, because you may actually find after this staff audit that you are overstaffed, in which case you can bring down your payroll. The other side of that is like, okay, now I've realized I don't have enough staff. I have too many holes. I'm not getting stuff done. They are absolutely stressed to the max whenever I ask them to take anything on. You know, they're immediately going into panic mode and overwhelm. These are things to consider about, do I actually need to hire another person who's not a provider so that we can make our office more efficient? Maybe it makes it so that you can see more patients in a day. You can see them more efficiently. So some of the things to watch for, you can clean up your staffing. So assign out the job duties, and you may need to like completely redo who's doing what job duties, but assign out those job duties according to their strengths and what makes the most sense for patient flow. So this is why it's important to have listed out all of the different sections of the patient experience so that you can make sure you're optimizing each of those sections in terms of flow. Once you've made changes for about 3 or 4 weeks, you got to discuss with your staff and get some feedback about how they feel like this is going. So do they feel like they don't have enough time? Where is that happening? You know, if it's in the keeping patients in the rooms and getting the rooms turned over, then these are areas that you've got to consider, you know, where do we need to add staff incrementally based on our patient load? And does it make sense for us financially? You do want to focus on both clinical and administrative roles. Don't forget that those can overlap in a small practice. So in fact, they realistically probably should. Generally, in practices that have under about 6 employees, I would say that everybody needs to be able to do a little bit of everything so that in case, you know, someone's sick, we're not completely at a halt. And then the other thing you can do is if you do find that you need more employees and that your in-office employees are completely overwhelmed, I would try to take as much of those administrative back end, not in office duties off of your in-office staff. And this is where virtual assistants can be highly effective for your practice. And they cost your practice significantly less than traditional employees. So an example is like we have VAs doing all of our eligibility checks, all of our balance checks, all of our copay checks ahead of time so that my front desk staff isn't spending time doing so. You know, and you may have like your billers handling that part of it, but it is something that you could have a virtual assistant do. Any of these tasks that somebody does not need to physically be in the office, those are tasks that would be good to try to give over to a virtual assistant. And there's a lot of different virtual assistant sites. I mean, HelloReach is one of them. I know Pineapple's another one, but there's a ton of them coming up. So I would just look around if you know other practices that have virtual assistants, you know, maybe ask them how they're feeling about everything and how they think that their VAs are doing. And the final check is whether or not you are delegating effectively. So as a physician, you need to check on your time. Are you using your time doing tasks that only you can do and that are only earning the practice revenue? Or are you spending other time doing routine tasks like paperwork, prescriptions, all stuff that we kind of in our head just put as, oh, this is part of the job. I have to do this paperwork. I have to do these things. Honestly, you don't. You need to be handing that stuff off as much as possible to other people. So example would be if you use a virtual scribe and you give them the capability of a nurse in your EMR. Maybe you are having the conversation with your patient about them needing whatever medication, what you're going to do for the dosage. And then you pop on after the visit with your virtual assistant and say, okay, I want this person to have this particular prescription. Here's the dosage. Here's the SIG. Go ahead and get that ready. They're going to work on doing that on the back end so that all you have to do is click in and sign. It doesn't seem like that would take you very long. And I get it. You're like, it takes me a minute and a half. This is not that big of a deal. But those minute and a halves add up. If you start looking at how long it takes you to do your documentation, to do your prescriptions, to fill out all the FMLA paperwork, you're going to find you're spending hours a day doing all of this. Those are hours you could be seeing patients and earning your practice more revenue. So have your staff fill out as much of the paperwork as they possibly can based on your notes. Have your staff doing the prescriptions ahead of time for you so that all you're doing is sign here, click here, click your note, yes, okay, do your billing, you're done. You can take some of this stuff down, especially using like a virtual scribe or virtual assistant, to minutes as opposed to hours. It's really impressive. So I would highly recommend really doing an audit of your own time and literally sit down and just like as you're going through your day, write down, okay, that took me 2 minutes. Yep, RX took me 1 minute. Write those things down and then add it up at the end of the day. I think you're going to be shocked. And this is where we get into embracing technology and some of this innovation, right? So your automated systems with technology are huge for you. And there's no reason not to embrace this. Like, let's be real. This is where things are going. So, you know, those of us that that don't love AI or whether you think it's going to take over the world or not, doesn't matter. I mean, it's moving that way. So we might as well embrace some of what AI can do for us as long as everything's HIPAA compliant. So having things like your appointment reminders, you know, patient portals for their paperwork, online check-ins, online forms, AI use, maybe it's AI marketing. Some people are using AI scribes. Some people use virtual assistant scribes. The list goes on for ways that we can automate our days nowadays. So start getting creative and looking around for what's available. Start thinking outside the box for what you can do. Another way you can embrace tech and innovation is you can offer telehealth services. It's really only if it makes sense for your specialty. I work mostly with other, you know, specialty physician practices. It's not always easy because a lot of times you need to be doing stuff physically in office, but it's, you know, don't ignore the option. You know, it requires a lot less overhead, a lot less time, very minimal staffing. And patients actually do still prefer this even post-pandemic. And a lot of insurances are actually still paying for telehealth visits. So don't completely put it off as not an option. And then finally, making sure you have a really good EMR. EMRs are expensive and they can come with all the bells and whistles. So you really have to make sure that you are weighing out those time savings for you and all of those included features with what your actual needs are, right? So if you're an insurance model practice, you're going to need a really good EMR. It's going to need to have billing capabilities and payment tracking and hopefully some CRM client retention management software and possibly even AI scribes. But if you're direct care, don't do any of that. Like, that makes no sense for you because you don't need to be billing insurance. You don't need to be worrying about this. Direct care, you've got a lot more options with really just kind of having a CRM and, you know, some way of kind of keeping your payments tracked. But you really could document on Microsoft Word if you wanted to. Like, there's no, you know, real limit to that. So actually in direct care, that's one of the ways I recommend people really look to decrease their expenses when they're initially setting up is don't go with some of these really, really tech heavy, you know, savvy ways of having an EMR. You don't need it. But if you're insurance or even hybrid, you're going to want it because the billing stuff really, really gets complicated and you want that part to be as efficient as possible. So now, if you're updated and using the latest tech, you've optimized your employees and who you might need to hire or delegate differently to, you've optimized your time, you're looking at your data, you've streamlined all your processes, now might be the time where you need to consider hiring another provider if you still cannot find room to get in more patients. Now, the thing to consider about hiring another provider is what level of provider you're actually going to hire. This depends on the type of work that you actually need done. So if you just need someone to do kind of like more of your routine visits, maybe see your post-ops, but, you know, somebody that generally is going to work and they could be under a physician's supervision, you may need to hire more like a nurse practitioner or an ARNP or an LPN. Like there's different kind of secondary level providers that could be utilized for this. If you are really feeling like, you know, I need to duplicate myself, like literally, then hiring an associate that's within your specialty is likely your next step, but we'll go through that in a different episode. That's an entire can of worms on its own. So here's kind of your action plan for really optimizing your practice and scaling things up. The first thing is assessing your readiness for scaling. Poll your staff, poll your patients, optimize your staff duties, and assess all your processes in a well-organized manner. You can identify your priority areas for improvement. And so, you know, sometimes it's not so easy to just take all of these changes and make them all at once. That's actually probably not a good idea because you're really not going to be tracking things properly at how well they're being implemented. So the better way to do this is actually prioritize what needs to be fixed and start with... You've got one or two ways you could do this. You can either start with your biggest bottlenecks, so the things that are causing you to be the furthest behind or that are your biggest, you know, revenue interrupters. Or you can go with just kind of like the cheap, easy stuff to get knocked out first. And it totally depends on how risk averse you are and how uncomfortable you're willing to be with your cash flow. So, you know, an example is if your cash flow is tight, you know, you really might need to look at more at what are the areas that I can kind of cheaply fix first. You know, I don't know how many of you have learn the Dave Ramsey, you know, snowball your debt method. But basically the idea is you take the littlest debt amounts first, you pay those off, and then you kind of keep compounding that and you start attacking the larger and larger debt pieces. This is the same kind of thing. You know, you're going to attack kind of the cheapest, easiest fixes to do first. They're not going to make a huge drastic increase in your revenue, but it will increase your revenue. Then you can start utilizing that to do more and more of the larger changes before you start really attacking any of those really large items, like changing up an EMR or a clearinghouse for your billing. That's a pretty big interrupter in your revenue. So, you know, sometimes people want to leave that for, you know, after they've already freed up some revenue. The other way you could do it is go for your biggest bottlenecks. And that's like, if you feel like you need to make really large changes and you're willing to deal with that larger interruption, maybe you've got some savings, you know, your clinic flow is okay, you're okay with going for a little bit without having, you know, all that revenue coming in, then yeah, going for the biggest bottleneck could be your best strategy. Changing your billers, firing or hiring key employees. I mean, some of those things can be pretty drastic on your cash flow. So it's important to really look at how quickly you need these changes to occur and then what you're actually truly comfortable with. And then finally, you want to develop kind of a phased growth strategy. So don't just make the list of changes, like I said, and swing for the fences without a plan. Like, you want to make a plan over those 12 weeks, preferably, and just be real about what you're actually going to execute in that time frame. You know, don't say, I'm going to change an EMR and I want to have it done in 2 weeks. Like, that's not going to happen. It takes 6 to 8 weeks to change that kind of thing over. So if you're looking at something like that, you know, check with your vendor, find out what is a reasonable time frame, and then, you know, just like with contractors, plan an extra 20% in time that it's actually going to take, because it never goes according to plan. But write out your overall plan, write down the steps it's going to take to get there, and then break it down into your weekly to-dos. These are the ways that we're able to get a lot more done in a lot less time, and you're able to actually really approach some of these huge projects without really overextending yourself and making yourself too crazy. So hopefully this is helpful. Hopefully you guys can take that action plan and start really implementing some good changes and scaling your practice this year. If you need anything, you know where to find us at www.visionarypracticesolutions.com.